It's their recent cases in Venezuela. Again, they tried it in Lebanon, and Syria, of course, is still ongoing. They must stop this and actually recognize other sovereign nations' rights to develop as they wish, and not treat the people of those nations as geopolitical guinea pigs. It's proving catastrophic. The deaths are all down to American foreign policy, and the overwhelming results are, Biden administration should note this, that it fails. I mean, the interventions constantly fail time and time again, and Washington needs to stop creating victims, and it can't afford to continue this murder and mayhem that results from all these policies. Their foreign prescriptions in all sorts of different parts of the world are losing because of this absolutely atrocious regime change set of policies.
Always good to have your analysis, Mohsen. Thank you, as always. Now to some other news, because it's been a month since that 11th hour post-Brexit trade deal between the United Kingdom and the European Union, and trade between the two sides is facing significant disruption at border points. Well, the culprit, increasingly complex paperwork and unprepared businesses. This is Saeed Poreza fills us in.
On the surface, traffic seems to be moving relatively freely at UK borders. But behind the scenes, there are disruptions. In some cases, the increased red tape has led to food either not leaving the places in the UK where it's produced or rotting at border posts for several days.
The French have said they're enforcing customs and single market rules more strictly as of today, February 1st. That could mean more disruptions in the flow of goods between the UK and the European Union.
The disruptions don't only impact UK exports. On the shop floor in Northern Ireland, empty shelves in some supermarkets, trucks arriving at British ports with incorrect or absent documentation, delaying their passage across the Irish Sea.
I've never seen disruption on Irish Sea movements on the scale we're seeing now. We've talked to lots of other hauliers, and we're reporting 40% of trailers are coming back from GB empty.
Brexit also seems to have turned the promise of solidarity and cooperation in the fight against COVID-19 into mere platitudes. Just last week, the EU said it was introducing export controls on its vaccines entering Northern Ireland. It's since reversed that decision, but after condemnation and threats of similar action from the UK.
It's an incredibly hostile and aggressive act by the European Union bloc. For years we were told after the European Union referendum vote that there couldn't be a hard border on the island of Ireland. And in one fell swoop, they've put that hard border in place.
Another victim of post-Brexit reality, online shoppers. Despite claims by British Prime Minister Boris Johnson of tariff-free trade, customers in the UK have found themselves facing extra charges when buying online from EU sellers. In some cases, a 20% jump in purchase prices in the form of VAT.
All of that only the tip of the iceberg. The trappings of Brexit were never going to be straightforward. We haven't seen the predicted chaos yet, but as of today, things may start to look very different. Saeed Poreza, London.
In some related but slightly different news, protesters angry with coronavirus restrictions have staged rallies in a number of European cities. In Brussels, police arrested hundreds of angry anti-lockdown protesters who demonstrated against strict nighttime curfews imposed to combat a surge in COVID-19 restrictions. Meanwhile, in Hungary, hospitality workers gathered to protest the country's lockdown restrictions, asking for increased government aid. The country has been in one form or another of lockdown for close to 3 months. And across the border in Austria, ignoring social distancing guidelines and without masks, far-right demonstrators took to the capital, Vienna, to protest against the country's curfew and restrictions. The UN's Middle East Peace Coordinator has confirmed that the United Nations is continuing to urge Israel to help occupied Palestinians have access to vaccinations, a requirement under international law. So far, the Israeli regime has completed more than 2.5 million vaccinations, while Palestinians continue to wait. Over 156,000 Palestinians have been infected with the virus, and more than 1,800 have lost their lives. Meanwhile, police have used water cannon to disperse crowds of protesters in Jerusalem al-Quds as thousands gather to demand Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's resignation on corruption charges. He faces charges of fraud, breach of trust, and accepting bribes in three cases involving billionaire associates and media moguls.
This is European News Bulletin broadcast by IRIB English Radio. In this program, we cover the most recent developments all over Europe. You can listen to this program on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
And Robert, in Lakesh, we've been hearing about what's going on there in the occupied territories. Fill us in, especially on this situation of COVID vaccination apartheid.
Well, for months now, we've been hearing the calls for Israel from human rights groups, the United Nations, based upon the fact that Israel is the occupying power and under the Fourth Geneva Convention is supposed to grant things like vaccines to Palestinians and take care of their health in the territories they occupy to give Palestinians vaccines. However, we have not seen that. But after all of the criticism that has came out, the Israeli Minister of War, Benny Gantz, has declared that there had been 5,000 vaccines sent to the occupied territories. We don't know exactly where they are being used. Allegations are that they're being sent to frontline workers. However, that cannot be confirmed at this moment. And the mainstream press in the West, interestingly, has picked upon on this, reporting that some vaccines have been sent over to the Palestinians. When 5,000 vaccines reportedly sent, there's no confirmation of this, it can't be independently verified, for 5 million people is just not does not suffice. And many people have been pulling up the fact that Israel is constantly denying this based upon the Oslo Accords. However, they never implemented all of the different agreements that they signed up to during the Oslo Accords number one and number two that was signed in 1995. And so their legal basis, which they claim to be working from, does not add up. And ultimately, this is a situation of apartheid, of complete apartheid, as confirmed by Israel's top human rights organization, B'Tselem.
Right. I guess the online reaction would reflect that in part, Rob.
Absolutely. The first one we have here is from a user called Ahmed Khaled, who says, only 5,000 vaccines, not actually going towards helping anyone. It's about a show so the mainstream media can say, look, they gave some vaccines. This is utterly disgusting, and the lying, demonic pseudo-journalists in the West will now lick Israel's feet and stop questioning them. Got another one here as well from Kerry N. Mendoza, who says, apartheid Israel is withholding the coronavirus vaccine from Palestinians while simultaneously bombing their hospitals and maintaining a siege on the West Bank and Gaza. That's genocidal.
Right. When we move now from one part of the globe back over to Russia, a story that we touched on just moments ago, but you have a slightly different way of looking at the Navalny situation there, Rob.
Absolutely. There's been a lot of calls online for calling out the racist and Islamophobic nature of some of these protests and protesters in Russia. And of course, many people calling out the Western role in these protests as well. And so, of course, we see that the mainstream press is praising this as some sort of wonderful revolution, which everyone should support unquestioningly. And meanwhile, what we have going on is that the Biden administration, according to his Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, are considering allowing for Georgia to be included inside of NATO. And that step, in of itself, would, of course, mean that NATO forces would be essentially at a state of war with Russia. On top of that as well, we're still waiting for the Biden administration to get back, not just in the New START agreement, but other agreements from the Soviet era, which essentially stop a nuclear arms race and nuclear threats against the two nations. And so the situation that we're seeing right now on the ground, as being endorsed by the West, should, many people are arguing, be something that is reported upon by Western media in a critical manner, and also should be it should not be the role of the United States and their embassies inside of foreign countries like Russia to be taking stances on issues without actually understanding them first, and that is being interpreted as a push for regime change.
That's never stopped outside forces before, actually understanding what you're dealing with here, but perhaps some of the users online might have a more deft reckoning of what's going on.
The first comment we pulled up here from Twitter is from a user called JP, who says, BBC meddling and pushing for what they would see as the Russian Spring. They know no shame. We have another one here as well from Alfred, who comments on this and says, no one has noticed how racist and Islamophobic these demonstrator movements are, and the mainstream media has such double standards. Terrible reporting on this issue.
We'll continue to watch very closely and critique as always. Thank you, Rob. So we move on to some other news now, because EU officials have held talks on a long-term strategy to fight future pandemics. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen, EU Commissioner for Health Stella Kyriakides, and EU Commissioner for Internal Market Thierry Breton spoke with scientists and pharmaceutical company CEOs involved in vaccine production. The bloc is seeking guidance from industry experts on how best to combat any future outbreaks that could rival the current crisis. Since the start of the pandemic, Europe has recorded more than 30 million infections with more than 730,000 deaths. The political situation in Iraq remains problematic. This as the government in Baghdad announced a postponement of the planned parliamentary elections despite relentless public anger against state corruption. Now, amid the uncertainty, we secured an exclusive interview with the nation's highest-ranking Sunni religious authority, and he spoke to us about the many troubles plaguing Iraqi society today. Robert Carter was in Baghdad and filed this report.
Any hopes of a good start to 2021 for Iraq were quickly squashed during January, with renewed criticism on the government amid the return of Daesh terror attacks to Baghdad, new US troop deployment, and a postponement of June's parliamentary elections. Amid the difficulties, we secured an exclusive interview with Iraq's most senior Sunni religious authority, Grand Mufti Mehdi al-Sumaidai, who was eager to speak out.
The situation for Sunnis is precarious and miserable. Every household suffers from different problems.
The Mufti blasted the government for failing to protect the people or improve living conditions. However, when asked about fears of sectarian strife, the Mufti made it clear he blames the politicians and is working closely with his Shia Muslim counterparts.
With trust in Allah and cooperation with the Shia Marzaiya, we achieved a school of unity and brotherhood in Islam. The suffering between Sunnis and Shias is equal. Neither suffers more than the other. This is because politicians don't fear Allah.
Before ending our discussion, the Mufti issued a stark warning to current Prime Minister Mustafa al-Kadhimi, who he condemned for snubbing Iraq scholars.
During Nouri al-Maliki's term, he always used to respond to us even if he was busy. He would answer the phone and sort it out straight away. But today, in al-Khadimi's term, he doesn't answer the phone. He doesn't answer anymore. To be honest, I am keeping the Sunnis quiet and putting pressure on them not to go onto the streets. If they do, there will be a big problem. However, if the government continues to attack the citizens who are asking for their rights, I'm going to make a fatwa. Asking the people to go out, I will make a big problem for the government.
Last year saw large numbers of Iraqis take to the streets to demand reforms. In some cases, people were killed. If Baghdad continues to alienate respected scholars such as this, they might have lost the only ones capable of stopping the protests from becoming a revolt. Robert Carter, Baghdad.
We we move from the Middle East to the Americas. Ahmed Caballo, a little bit more insider news here on what happened during another failed Venezuelan coup.
Yes, Amina. So Jorge Rodriguez, who is the new president of the Venezuelan National Assembly, showed evidence on Sunday of Leopoldo López and Juan Guaido's involvement in the failed Gideon operation, which was the failed coup attempt that happened in May last year, that looked more like a scene from the A-Team than it did from than more than it did than a serious attempt to overthrow the Venezuelan government. But what is interesting about this is there's been a witness testimony from Yaxi Alvarez, and she's saying that she met with FBI and DEA officials in Florida last year, and that also Colombia's President Iván Duque was involved, as well as Colombia's top intelligence agency. Now, what's interesting is that she was meant to be protected by Colombia and was being protected by Colombia until Russia in the UN Security Council started to apply pressure on Colombia's role, and then they gave her up, as well as the other collaborators and Colombian and Venezuelan dissidents that were involved in the coup attempt, which shows there really is no honor amongst thieves. Now, there's been a reaction online, as you can imagine. Ben Norton says, a key coup plotter in the May 20 botched invasion of Venezuela said she met with FBI and DEA officials. She admitted Colombia's intelligence services aided them and knew everything, and President Iván Duque and far-right politician Kingpin Alvaro Uribe helped. Now, Not Here Follows says, American liberals are never upset when we pan coups in other people's countries, which is why it's so fascinating to watch them lose their stuff over the Jan 6 riots. Americanism, the privilege of never having to live through an actual coup. And that tweet reminds me of Evo Morales, the former president of Bolivia's comments, when he says, the reason why there's no real coups in the United States is because there's no U.S. embassy in the United States.
A nice little gotcha moment there. We'll move on to another story that, if we're going to have more years of this, my head's already hurting.
Yeah, so this is about AIPAC, Joe Biden, and what we're expected to expect over the next 4 years. So the NBC removes a story on Biden officials' ties to $500,000 in AIPAC donations. Now, they removed the article because they said it didn't meet their editorial standards and that they should have got opposition, i.e. supporters of AIPAC, to comment on the story. Now, it's absurd. They never do this when it comes to Iran, Venezuela, who they routinely and habitually condemn and smear. They never get Iranian or Venezuelan voices that support the governments there to comment. So why this with AIPAC? I think we all know the reason. Jimmy Dore explaining the hypocrisy behind this decision.
After a number of readers raised issues with this article, NBC News conducted a review and has determined that it fell short of our reporting standards. In order to warrant publication, it needed on-the-record quotes from critics rather than anonymous ones. Why is that? They produce almost every article I read from NBC News is sourced with anonymous sources, especially the ones against anti-war voices. They're all sourcing. And the article should have also included more views from those who believe that donations to AIPAC do not represent a conflict. They should also have had more views from people who think AIPAC is a charity organization that helps Palestinians.
Right. I think he laid that out pretty clearly there. It was editorial rigor that was the problem with that article, Ahmed.
Yeah, I mean, people online are not buying that. So Lee Fang says, NBC News retracts a story about a high-level Biden security nominee donation to AIPAC. No factual errors are given. Instead, an editor's note claiming it wasn't really a conflict of interest. And Blake Wood says, NBC's Ken Dillon used to send his pieces to the CIA prior to publishing. I guess NBC thinks he should have run this story by AIPAC first. Now, what's interesting...
Time for one more, Ahmed, if you wish.
Yes, so Islam is Mathematics says, NBC News has pulled an article about Joe Biden that paints him in a negative light in regards to his senior advisor once donating $500,000 to Israel and AIPAC. This story is true, but they've pulled it and apologized for reporting it. LOL, it's about to be 4 years of this. And if you wanted proof of just how powerful the Israel lobby in the United States really is, This story demonstrates it. We talk about Russian interference in US politics. What we don't talk about is the absolute fact. The thing that is completely proven time and time again is that Israel has disproportionate power over the electoral policies and what the mainstream media reports in the United States.
Well, I'd like to see a presidential candidate who's successful, who didn't go to the AIPAC conference in the moments before that election. I can't think of any. Perhaps a viewer might want to set me straight on that one. Ahmed Kabbalah, thank you. And that is where we leave it. Stay safe.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson, do not belittle any sin. Minor sins are changed to major sins due to several factors, one of which is to consider them to be little and unimportant. This is one of the dangerous satanic temptations. Those sins which man fears and considers as major sins are not so dangerous because one is always careful not to commit them. But when he assumes a sin to be a minor and is not afraid of it, he is easily drawn to it again and again. Minor sins change to major, keeping him away from happiness and prosperity forever. Furthermore, every sin, however small, is significant in one respect. It exceeds the bound of rules of Allah the Almighty. Brothers and sisters, we know that there is a segregation and a separation between the two classifications of sins. One is the minor sins and the greater sins. Our scholars, our ulama have wrote books on that, and it is all good. There's nothing wrong with it. But at the end of the day, one point that I just want you to focus on is that at the end of the day, despite the fact that it is a minor sin or a major sin, whose rules are you violating? At the end of the day, it is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. His rules are being violated. Whether we classify it to be a smaller sin or a bigger sin, a minor sin or a major sin, this is something that should be enough for us to stop sinning. And this is what Islam expects from us. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing do not belittle any sin. Sometimes, you know, because of the classifications that we hear about, the major sin and the minor sin, and then there are some sins that are socially very negative, so to speak. we do not perform the major sins and those socially challenged sins, but what about minor sins? Unfortunately, sometimes we take these minor sins to be light. We consider them to be of not much harm to us. And this is something that is not why the major and the minor sins were classified in two categories to begin with. Minor sins does not mean that they do not harm you. It does not mean that we start taking them lightly. Imam Askari alayhi salam, the 11th infallible Imam, says, one of the sins that would not be forgiven is for a man to say, I wish my sin to be only this one. See, this whole attitude, this whole approach towards sins is what is being challenged here. Thinking lightly of a minor sin leads to doom. The Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings be upon him, said, beware of these sins that are regarded as insignificant, for they will accumulate until they destroy a man. See, over here, the talk is not about the sins that everybody knows to be bad and they're socially unacceptable and they are mentioned as major sins in the books of Islam and in the Quran and Hadith. No, over here, the Prophet of Allah is informing us about the sins that are regarded insignificant. Don't let them out of sight. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. the limelight.
Former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows liquidated as much as $200,000 in his stocks a week after the election, according to financial disclosures. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Roger Slomberger, journalist. This article is published under the heading, Trump Chief of Staff Liquidated as Much as $200,000 in Stock After Election. Stay tuned for the details. Former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows liquidated as much as $200,000 in stocks a week after the election, according to financial disclosures obtained recently. As a whole, the filing suggests that Meadows, who was one of the 15 wealthiest new members of Congress when he first came to Washington, continues to see his net worth dwindle as he re-enters private life for the first time in 8 years. Disclosures show that Meadows unloaded anywhere between $80,000 and $200,000 in stock on November 9th, ditching shares in two BlackRock iShares funds, Exponential Technologies and U.S. Technology, as well as the tech company Trimble Incorporation. At the time, President Trump's chief of staff was in isolation, having announced that he had contracted the coronavirus just 2 days before, likely at the White House election night. That appears to have spread infections among several of former president's top aides and friends. Politico reported recently that Meadows' job prospects upon leaving the administration were so thin that he considered taking work with the Trump Organization. A day later, news broke that Meadows, who, until last Wednesday, was near the pinnacle of power, had accepted a position with a little-known group called the Conservative Partnership Institute, a networking hub for conservatives helmed by former South Carolina Senator Jim DeMint. Meadows, who before joining the White House was elected 4 times as a Republican congressman from Western North Carolina, has come under scrutiny for a number of transactions and reporting violations. For example, the one-time House Freedom Caucus leader has since at least 2018 apparently failed to disclose a loan and $18,000 in monthly income related to his sale of a deed to a fossil park in Dinosaur, Colorado, dedicated to promoting the creationist myth that humans coexisted with prehistoric lizards. Meadows also continued to pay a top staffer for months after he cut him loose for sexual harassment in 2015, a lapse for which he was cited and fined $40,000 by the White Ethics Committee in 2018. Furthermore, in 2019, Meadows failed to file a House financial disclosure altogether, and still has offered no public accounting for that year, submitting only a termination notice when he departed for the White House last March. In October, the Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington filed a criminal complaint with the Federal Elections Commission based on reportings that Meadows appears to have committed a number of campaign finance crimes. The alleged violations include spending thousands of dollars on personal expenses such as gourmet cupcakes, clubs, and lodging at Trump's Washington Hotel. The November stock sell-off came 10 days after Crew filed its complaint. Subsequent FEC filings from Meadows show restrained expenditures and a hike in legitimate disbursements to other political committees. According to data compiled by Open Secrets, Meadows, who worked as a real estate salesman and restaurateur before running for federal office, has seen his net worth plummet since joining Congress in 2013, from an estimated $7 million to possibly less than $1 million, according to his most recent 2020 filing. In that time, he has engaged in real estate and stock transactions and even bought a billboard in Jackson County, North Carolina, that pays him between $1,000 and $2,500 in rent per annum, according to filings. Still, it is not obvious why Meadows' net worth has declined by millions of dollars, as available data suggests. He apparently felt the need to access more financial liquidity last year, taking out a line of credit of up to $50,000. According to recent reports, some of those transactions appear to have been started by Edward Jones' financial advisor Roger Cawthorn, the father of Representative Madison Cawthorn, the youngest person elected to Congress in modern history, who now holds Meadows' former House seat. Because executive branch regulations do not require the same level of detail as congressional disclosures, it is impossible to know whether Meadows still maintains active Edward Jones accounts. On the day Meadows formally resigned from Congress, March 30, 2020, his campaign reported spending $2,650 on printed materials from Anne Hand Jewelry, though an Anne Hand representative told reporters the store does not sell anything that could be characterized as such. The following day, his first in the Trump administration's employ, Meadows sold up to $60,000 in stock. 10 days later, he dumped up to $50,000 more.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salaamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon you all. And you're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing, only on IRIB English Radio. In this program, we discuss problems and questions parents have regarding the Islamic upbringing of their children. And the answers are mostly based upon the book Children in Quran and Sunnah, compiled by Ayatollah Ray Shahri. I'm Hassan, and we have our guest speaker with us, Brother Miqdad. He's an Islamic researcher in the Hawza Ilmiya of Qom. Salaamu alaikum, Brother Miqdad, and thank you for joining us with the show.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah. The pleasure is all mine.
In the previous show, we were discussing about a question that one of our listeners had. It was like I read somewhere that it's important to give hope to our children, like hope about future. If it's correct, then how do we do it? So we were discussing this with Brother Meghdad, and we reached to the point that, like, apart from, you know, the importance of giving hope to our children, we need to make them feel important. And we need to, you know, explain them that there could be difficulties in their path and they have to strive to reach their goals. So from there, you can continue, Brother Meghdad, please.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Yeah, so we were talking about how it's important for children, or parents rather, to teach their children that, yes, goals will be reached and you should aim really high. Yeah. Don't aim for something small, aim really high. You are able to achieve a lot in this world and in the hereafter. However, at the same time, we need to teach our children and make them realize in practice that difficulties will come on your way.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes in everybody's way.
Yeah.
And we have to be strong enough to face those difficulties.
Yeah.
And we do this through not always making it very, very comfortable for our children.
Mm-hmm.
Right? As parents, yes, it's our duty to make sure that we fulfill the physical needs of our children.
Yeah.
I'm not saying starve your children or ignore them.
We should keep it moderate.
Yeah, we should keep it moderate. And we shouldn't be scared of a little bit difficult that will come.
Yeah.
Don't avoid it too much,
mm-hmm.
right? And at times, do some activities that require efforts, that require being challenged,
yeah.
right? Going on adventures, going on mountain climbing, bearing the cold weather, bearing a bit of hunger,
mm-hmm.
right? These things are very important. Now, I'm not saying don't pack snacks when you go for a picnic, for example, or for an adventure out there. But if you've sometimes forgotten or if sometimes less, then don't count it as the end of the world. Sometimes it happens that you take your children to football, for example,
mm-hmm.
right? And one day they forgot to take the bottle of water or they forgot to take their snacks,
uh-huh.
right? They have to bear a bit of thirst. It's fine,
yeah.
right? It's not such a big deal. We shouldn't make it sound like, oh, I'm really sorry. It was the worst thing that could have happened in the world. No, it's a bit of thirst. You can bear it. You're strong enough,
mm-hmm.
right? So
with all these, they learn how to face difficulties.
Exactly. They face a bit of difficulties.
Yeah.
It's good in their lives. I remember someone was saying that today, not only you don't allow your children to play in the streets,
uh-huh.
but because it's really cold and you're going to face a cold, you're going to catch a cold,
uh-huh.
but you put them near the heater and you bring them hot milk and
yeah.
you cover them with a nice blanket mm-hmm. and they have a book on their hand, and this is spoiling a child,
yeah, yeah.
right? No, let them play in the cold outside. It's
mm-hmm.
fine if they have a water fight in winter.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it shouldn't be dangerous, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not saying expose your children to danger or expose
yeah.
them to illness. But if they're having a really good time, right? And it might mean that they'll feel a bit cold,
mm-hmm.
okay? That's fine. Allow that to happen. This is the second point.
So that was an interesting discussion. So, dear listeners, please stay tuned. We'll continue after a short break.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam said, "No father has granted a gift to his child better than good manners."
Welcome back, dear listeners, and we're talking about parents have to allow their children to face difficulties. So, Brother Meghdad, please continue.
One crucial point regarding this, in the discussion of allowing children to face pain and explain to them in action that hopes are good, but the goal won't be achieved unless we go through difficulty.
That's right.
Is that you also teach children that there is always help on
mm-hmm.
the path of difficulties.
Yeah.
This is part of giving hope to children.
Yeah.
So, whilst you're giving them hope for the goal, and you're teaching them that it will be very difficult
mm-hmm.
to reach there, and you won't get there unless and until you go through efforts,
yeah.
through struggling, right?
Yeah.
However, you should always remember that through these struggles and these efforts, you should always be helped. Someone
mm-hmm.
will always be there to help you. Now, in practice, that means you as parents,
yeah.
right? As parents, we should always be there to help your children. Now, when I said you should allow them to face difficulties, or you should allow them to face pain, and you should teach them that there is struggle.
Yeah.
However, you should always be there by their side.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Like that supporting them.
Supporting them, definitely.
Yeah.
Even going through the difficulty yourself, when you're climbing a mountain together,
mm-hmm.
you're feeling the pain as well, right? It's a difficult climb. You're together in this. And if he falls or gets injured, you're there to help him out or her out. So this is very important, that at the same time that you realize that there is difficulty, there's also a helping hand always. And as children grow up and they realize that life has difficulties, life has tests and challenges,
true,
and I need to put effort, they also realize that Allah is always with me, right? And although the tests are from Allah, the help within these tests are also from Allah. And this really is a crucial point, because you realize that in today's society, not only does the next generation think that we can become millionaire overnight without any effort, but also when they come to a point where they're challenged or they face difficulty or somebody from their life passed away or they break an arm or they have to go through a cesarean, for example, or all these difficulties of lives, that some of them are accidents, some of them are natural part of life, they go through anxiety, through depression, through all these mental issues. And the reason is why is because they don't have this hope that someone is helping me. They don't feel that I'm being helped in this. And they don't realize that there's a goal behind this suffering.
We need to make them feel that we are supporting them always, like we are at their back, like we have got their back.
Exactly. And at the same time, realize that there is a goal behind these sufferings, right? There's a goal behind these tests and difficulties. So this leads us to this next point, that we realize that you teach children that these struggles and these pains that we go through are not just random.
Yeah.
And they're not pointless, right?
How?
I remember sometimes you go to mountains and the child asks us, like, why are we doing this? Right? Why are we going through so much suffering and pain? Right? Is it not possible for us to just make a lift? Isn't it easier just to make a lift or just catch a train? I remember once we were with our friends. I'll mention this and inshallah we can go to the break. We once with our friend, we were climbing the mountain. It's quite a high mountain. It took a couple hours to get there. And when we reached at the top, we realized that from the other side of the mountain, you could take a train to the top. At the top of the mountain, there was a train station, right? That was going, and you could take the train from the other side. And we had come from this side, and we had gone through the whole pain of... And I was thinking to myself, yes, a lot of people said that. What did we just do? Could we just have gone on the other side of the mountain and just took the train all the way to the top? But no, the point is that we had to go through suffering. There's a purpose in these difficult times.
That's actually an interesting question, that was the reason behind facing struggles and difficulties. So dear audience, stay with us and we'll continue after a short break.
Hey, stop! I got a better game!
IRIB English Radio presents A Priceless Gift to Parents. Do you have problem with your kids?
I have two boys. One is 5 year old and the other one is 3.5. And they constantly fight and wrestle with each other, and it often gets to a dangerous stage.
My 18-month-old daughter has learned to eat by herself, and she just refuses that I feed her. But usually, all the food basically goes everywhere except her mouth. So how can we allow this strife to happen for the purpose of freedom?
Don't worry, we're here to help.
For a child, the purpose of the food is only to feed. It's also for him to learn. It's also for him to explore and fulfill the need of curiosity, fulfill the need of freedom.
Islamic upbringing. Contact us. English radio at irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners, and we're discussing about like the reason behind facing difficulties. Like, why do we need to face difficulties? We have Brother Maghdad with us, and Brother, please continue.
So, another thing we need to explain to our children is that these difficulties have a purpose behind them. In brackets, I mentioned this right now, that slowly, slowly, as children realize, or as children grow up, they realize that difficulties are not just physical difficulties. Yes, when we're young, we're either hungry or cold or tired and my legs are hurting and my knees are paining, and these are physical difficulties and pains, which are really good. They make someone strong. But as they grow, children realize that sometimes pain becomes emotional pain as well. And this should not happen at a young age. It usually comes at a much older age, when children reach the age of 7, 6, 7, 8 and above. When they realize that you can feel loneliness, you can feel heartbroken, you can feel humiliated, you can feel fear and scared, you can feel an emotional pain, right? These are emotional difficulties that are also part and parcel of our journey and our life.
True.
But then slowly, as children grow up, they also realize that, and unfortunately, sometimes even adults don't realize mm-hmm. this, but there are even higher levels of pains, right? Mm-hmm. That are related to a more intellectual understanding.
Mm-hmm.
You know when the Prophet says that, no prophet has faced more difficulties mm-hmm. than I have.
Allah right? Akbar.
This is what our messenger says. Now, mm-hmm. this difficulty is not just related to a physical stress, that the Prophet was fighting the battle and he got hurt, for mm-hmm. example. Or we have in history, for example, that he went for tabligh mm-hmm. outside of the city of Makkah and people threw stones at him and he got hurt. This is not necessarily what the Prophet trying to say when he says that I got hurt, because other prophets were faced with much difficult physical challenges as well.
So it's interesting to note over here that, you know, even Prophet, the best of creation, even they have gone through difficulties.
Definitely. And the best of mankind, who has the highest goal, went through the highest difficulty.
Yeah.
It's all linked together, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's the best of mankind with the highest perfection and the highest goal that one can reach, has gone through the highest mm-hmm. level of difficulty. So difficulties are of greater levels as well. So more than physical and emotional difficulties, you also have difficulties that are spiritual, difficulties mm-hmm. that are related to the aql and our understanding.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, what's important for us to realize and teach our children slowly is that these difficulties and pains and suffering that we go through in life, they have a purpose.
Uh-huh.
And that purpose is manifold. One of them is that it makes us stronger,
mm-hmm.
right? It makes a person stronger.
Yeah.
Number two is that it makes a person more determined to reach the goal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're climbing the mountain, if you don't face any difficulties, you will straight away abandon it. This is mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like we're achieving something.
Yeah.
Only when you feel a bit of pain,
mm-hmm.
okay, when your legs start hurting when you climb the mountain, you feel like, now I'm doing something important.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting to somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like this feels that we're reaching closer to the goal. Thirdly, through suffering, the goal becomes valuable.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, the question people ask is that, if God can create us however he wanted, why
mm-hmm.
didn't he create us straight away in paradise?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, why go through the world and go through the sufferings of the world?
Yeah.
And then why just not create us in paradise?
Yeah.
Much quicker and simple, right?
Yeah.
The answer is that you would not have valued paradise
mm-hmm.
if you hadn't strived for it, right? It's when we strive for the mountain, when we strive for the peak of the mountain, and you really, really put a lot of effort and pain and struggle through it, when you reach there, you feel amazing. And the last point why we should go through difficulties and suffering is that through that we realize our own weaknesses and we realize our need for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Yeah.
The very reason why Allah gives us these imtihan and puts us through these difficulties is that we turn to Allah. And so when we turn, when we face this difficulty, when you go through children and they're also climbing the mountain and really struggling through it, remind them that Allah is helping you and you are in need of Allah.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the purpose of these difficulties.
Thank you so much, Brother Mila. That was a beautiful explanation, and we're discussing about why children need to face trials and what's the purpose behind the trials. And thank you so much to your audience for joining us on the program. And if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please contact us at our email, englishradio@irib.ir, and visit us at our website, parstoday.com. Until the next program, fi amanullah.
Islam solves all of its problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life. A complete way, it's a complete way.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 49 meters, 7,300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5.
and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.